All right. Welcome everyone to the Health Human Services and Housing Committee meeting for March 2nd, 2022. Call the meeting to order. I'll start with a motion to approve the February 2nd, 2022 meeting minutes.
So moved.
Legislator Nolan, second.
I'll
Legislator
second.
Petit, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, any opposed? Terrific. The first resolution, just to note, it was added onto our committee later. So if you opened an earlier agenda, you may not see it, but it is relevant to ours. So that's resolution number 99, amending capital project 597 for ARP housing, the purchase and renovation of 21 Elizabeth Street group home. A motion to discuss?
I'll move it.
Legislator Nolan, second.
I'll second.
Okay, any discussion? Legislator Erner.
Thank you, Chair Walter. I just want to say how much I support this. This is in my district. This, whatever we decide to do with it, it sounds most likely to be for families who are currently unhoused or unstably housed. That's right next to school. It is a real lifesaver here in Kingston. And thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments?
I would like to have my name added as a co-sponsor, please.
Certainly.
Or it's referred to us, but are we all sponsors?
Technically, it's myself and Legislator Lopez, but you can certainly be added, as can
Thank
anyone
you.
Else. Any other comments? I'd also like to express my enthusiasm towards this project. It's a very important step towards many steps that we hopefully will be taking. I'll just use this moment, I'll remind you again at the end of the meeting that we are going to have a special housing meeting at the end of this month so we can explore what those next steps really could look like. So with nothing further, all in favor of resolution number 99?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
And abstentions. Okay, thank you. It passes. Resolution 106, appointing and reappointing members to the Ulster County Community Action Committee Board of Directors. A motion to discuss?
I'll make that motion.
Petit, second Lopez. Any discussion? So there are several individuals on this committee who are also on that committee. Is that correct? All right, I guess there's no further discussion. So all in favor of resolution number 106?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Okay, unanimous. Just pause while someone enters the room. Next, we have resolution 139, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 4 of 2022, a local law enacting a drug take back program in Ulster County. A motion to discuss?
Move it.
Nolan, second. Erner? Okay, discussion? Legislator Petit?
Thank you. This resolution, the purpose of it is to actually have the pharmacies start taking back the drugs. And it is a state law. However, it's kind of fallen flat. I don't believe we have many, if any, pharmacies within Ulster County that have containers. We do have containers at our law enforcement offices, and that's virtually all of them. In fact, I had spoken with Sheriff Figueroa, who was kind enough to take a picture of the one at the center on, what is that, Route 32. And he goes, oh, look, it's full. However, not everybody's comfortable going into a police station to drop off their pharmaceuticals. Also, when the big chains and even some of the smaller pharmacies have them in there. When people go in to renew or pick up other prescriptions, it's more convenient for them to drop off. We really need to get this medicine off of the streets, out of make sure they don't fall into the hands of our young people. I believe statistically when our kids start to experiment with pharmaceuticals, it's easy enough to get it out of their, grandma's cabinet, or if somebody gets their hands on any other way. So this is just a proper way to dispose of them. Also, environmentally, for years, the standard practice has been to flush these things down the toilet. And that was per the DEC. We found since then that part of the process with wastewater getting put back into, once it's been treated, into our surface water systems, we're finding that it's not taking out those pharmaceuticals and it's impacting the ecosystem. So it is really something that we need to get on the books here in Ulster County and find a way to enforce it to make sure that the pharmacies are putting in these collection units.
Legislator, well, I'll start with committee members and then I'll go to you, Legislator Maloney. Legislator Nolan and then Erner.
Yes, thank you, Chair Walter. Yes, this is an initiative. I don't know whether Legislator Petit would have been here, I think, perhaps, but that Ulster County worked on for the state level and actually brought forward, encouraged the bringing forward of legislation at the state level to accomplish this. I think the public hearing is the place where we can get some sense of whether or not the law as written, it has everything it needs, whether we want to have any kind of follow-up if there are not pharmacies complying. I think there are pharmacies that do have these takebacks, and maybe we can, as part of this outreach, try to gather a list of those that do already have it and applaud those pharmacies for having done this already.
Legislator Erner.
Thank you, Chair Walter. Following up with Legislator Nolan about some changes the public may want to have, I just have a few typos in the proposed local law's current language. Is this a place where we can make those or recommend to make those?
I think it's probably best that you just reach out to the sponsors so that they can make those corrections.
Okay, and I have one that's not a typo, but I would like to bring it to the committee's attention, which is under Section 5, Collection Item B2, it says all drug take-back program operators shall notify other potential authorized collectors of the opportunity to serve as an authorized collector. And that seemed...
I'll explain some of that when I go. There's a legal aspect to this that I was going to give a spiel on the other half of it.
Okay, yeah, my only concern was that seemed very broad, but that's the end of my comments. Thank you.
Legislator Uchitel?
Yeah, my comment might get answered as well, but I was just curious about the violations. I see Section 6 says violations pursuant to Section 12 of this chapter, but I unless I'm misreading what that means regarding this chapter, that's the last page, and it ends on Section 10. So that's, I'm just curious about that, because it sounds like that's what it's going to come down to if the pharmacies are already ignoring it.
So I'll get to Legislator Maloney in a second, but I just want to say a couple of words of my own, and then I'll go outside the committee. So I'm completely supportive of prescription take-back, personally. I've been working for a year and a half on this process, or maybe more. I've been keeping up with when it was Senator Metzger on what the process, where we were on the state, and then with Senator Hinchey, and including drafting an amendment to their resolution on a state level so that we could move this a lot farther. So I 100% am behind the idea. My concerns are that there's a law in place and it has a process. And I don't know if Dr. Smith can speak to it or we need our attorneys, but right now there's, first of all, the expectation is that it's the producers of the medications that must come up with the plan. There was a lot of pushback from the environmental movement originally when this got put forth because of how these plastics would be disposed of. So the expectation was not on the pharmacies, but on the companies. That said, the amendments to the resolution that are currently at the New York State level in the Assembly and in the Senate are putting it the onus on the pharmacies if there's not a plan in place from these companies. But I'm concerned about how this interferes or is impacted by the state rules and regulations. I will say that there are only two pharmacies in Ulster County that do it on their own, one in Kingston and one in New Paltz. The Department of Health, I will say publicly, at the New York State level, dragged their feet on this for a very, very long time in implementing it. And even if you read the law very carefully, it gives a ridiculous amount of time for these companies to comply. So again, and maybe Legislator Maloney, I'm sure, has plenty to say on this, but in terms of the legality of this, when there's a process in place, there's a current review happening. And again, the legality when the expectation is that it's the companies that produce these medications must come up with the plan. Anyone else in the committee have comments? Okay, Legislator Maloney.
Okay, and maybe me and Laura had planned on giving a dual opening and I didn't get kicked to me, so I was going to talk about the legal aspect. You mentioned the state. The state enacted, you'd know better, 18 or 19, their drug take back, and it's really, unfortunately, not worth the paper that it was written on because they gave choices. Basically, they said every pharmacy in the state has to have a drug take back plan, and then they listed things that would appease this law. One of the things was an envelope that you can pay $2 for at the pharmacy, which no one's going to do, and you do it every time you want to do it, and then you mail it in. And virtually every pharmacy, I did not know there was one in New Paltz. I knew there was one pharmacy in Kingston, one of the big box stores that has a pharmacy, actually has their drug take back. So, but every other pharmacy has chosen to choose that option of this envelope that no one even knows anything about. So that's why Legislator Erner was saying was some of the language seems confusing. Even Legislator Yucatel brought up some things. I was going to say that tonight, that we had to basically portion out certain parts of the state, but we had to use a lot of the state language so as to build upon it. I had several conversations with a Department of Health lawyer up in Albany, making sure we were just building upon and not violating any aspect of that. One of the reasons some of this gets so wordy is because in that state law, I believe the intent behind it was we don't want to be the cause of rising drug costs. So if we make a pharmacy spend money, they're going to pass it along by charging more for drugs, I think is the theory. So part of the state law says, if you choose, I mean, I'm using basic layman's terms, but if you choose to check the box of having a drug take back box, then the money, anything you do with your program, you have to charge it to a manufacturer. And the state apparently has the percentage of what Pfizer and all these other big manufacturers do in our state. And then they have to reimburse the pharmacies for the money it costs them for the drug take back. All that state language has been cut and pasted and put into this legislation. So at times what Phil is finding is a mistake here or there. And that's why I've started out, I don't think any of it's going to be substantive, so we can fix it as we go to the public hearing. But there is going to be a couple of things, and me and Laura talked about today. Anything you see, email us, because there was a lot for Chris Rigucci to get in, because we were also taking out, I think they didn't refer to it as hospice, but one of the things they were describing in there, I think they were talking about hospice and then the smaller pharmacies. We didn't want to do it to the little apothecaries. and give them all this hassle. We thought we could do quite a bit of good by just having the big ones. They're also going to know how to do it because they're doing this in other states and they're doing this in other parts of the state probably. So they're going to be able to navigate this rather easily. Like with the plastic bag law, we weren't real worried about Target and Walmart complying. Their corporations, they all 100% of the box stores and the big grocery stores all complied with plastic bags. So we weren't as worried about enforcement with that. And I'd be shocked if there was a Rite Aid, and it's easy. There's only 20 of them or whatever. So we're going to be able to go and see who's got a drug drop-off box. Enforcement, I didn't think needed to be a real concern up front. If it ends up being, then I think we could go and amend it in the long run. I don't think it's going to be. I don't think Rite Aid or Target or any of these places are going to look for that kind of public scrutiny if they're going to refuse to provide a drug drop-off box when the county's telling you have to. So I don't know if that answered a lot of the questions, but that's what we're dealing with. We have to, the state says if you do it, if you have a drug drop-off, you have to do this. So we're just saying, yeah, you do have to have it. The state made it an option. We're saying you have to do it, but now the state has all this language that you have to follow. So we're just passing it along. It's all there.
Thank you. Legislator Nolan.
Yeah, I think we're going to need to stay closely in contact with the council for this and questions of supersession. One suggestion I would have, and not sure that it needs to be done before the public hearing, but consideration, I think, to say a medication take back or med take back. So if the sponsors would give that some thought, I think it's confusing to people what the term drug means, and we might not want to use it for this.
Legislator Erner.
Thank you. And Legislator Maloney, thanks for bringing up the part about not burdening the smaller, pharmacies. With that in mind, though, it occurs to me that if folks are going to the big chains to drop off their drugs, they might do their shopping there and they might have otherwise gone to the smaller pharmacy. So maybe we want to think about a way of still incentivizing people to continue supporting their neighborhood pharmacy if that's where they choose to go.
Thank you. So again, my concern is also that if some of these plans are under review right now at the State Department of Health, it's not quite clear what happens if we come in with some expectation of these organizations that are under review right now to begin. I'd also add that since the original legislation, there's been a scientific improvement in that there are bags in which people can dispose of their medication safely. It actually, and again, Dr. Smith, if you're there, you can help correct me if I'm wrong, but you put the medication in the bag there, Mark's showing it, and it actually destroys it and makes it safe to get rid of. I know that the amendments at the state level are to include these bags and potentially even using the opioid settlement money towards this end. But again, I would really want to know in terms of the legality, since there is that state level and some of these pharmacies are under review right now with their plans, how this even works for the county to feasibly undermine those efforts. It's not because I would want that, I'm looking for this to happen as quickly as possible, but I question just sort of how that process works. And I don't know, Dr. Smith, if you're on and you know anything about our current pharmacies and where they are in the process?
To be honest with you, Legislator Walter, it's been a bit of time since I actually was involved in this initiative. So I know there were a couple of pharmacies, private ones, independent ones, that came forward that were willing to participate. There was a grant several years ago that was going to help to subsidize their costs involved in it. And I do know that the governor, former governor, did sign the bill and that it has been sitting in the state DOH waiting for some of these issues to be resolved. So in terms of which ones, I thought Nikos was one of them originally, but I would have to go back and look at that. But You know, as far as the big box chains, of course, they were the ones that were pushing back with the quote unquote reason of the added cost and whatever. And I think at one time the county also proposed perhaps giving these bags and some subsidy toward these bags, but that never really came to pass either. But I do know that it has been stalled and waiting for some clarification on some of these legal issues, including who ultimately is the person or the entity, as it were, responsible for subsidizing this cost. Is it the manufacturer and not the Rite Aids or the CVSs or Walgreens? So, yeah, but again, it's been stalled for now 3 years, I think it is. And to tell you the truth, I'm not sure how much, you know, how far they've progressed in some of these issues legally.
It would be helpful if we could find out more about whether the application process has begun by our local pharmacies and where they are in that status, if it's true. Just because that would help, it'd be a very big difference if they haven't even started their application process versus they're in the middle of it right now. Legislator Petit.
Thank you. Just a couple of follow-up points. I mean, those bags, you know, could be great. They're compostable, but I think, you know, those of us in the environmental field understand that what do you do when you can compost something is you throw it in the garbage because it's going to compost in there. Eventually, the toxins from these pharmaceuticals are still going to be leaching out, you know, whether you put it into a compost pile or you put it into the garbage container. You know, as far as the opioid lawsuit funding that we have, I mean, that's a substantial amount of money. We have about 33 pharmacies in Ulster County. You know, again, the larger ones under the existing law should have their expenses paid in full by the manufacturers. But these units are $1,650 each. It's not substantial. And we can certainly get those for under $7 million. So I still think we should be moving forward with the public hearing.
Just to clarify, it's no longer the chemical reaction removes the impact of those when you put them in the bags. And actually, just to reiterate, the biggest delay in the state level for getting this started was from the environmental group because they were exceedingly concerned about what was going to happen to these empty plastic containers. So, you know, just putting that out there, that is, it's not just taking these products, but then what do you do with the products afterwards? And that's a big part of the plan. I'm going to let Legislator Maloney go because he's been waiting patiently. Legislator Uchitel, and then we'll go to you.
Just a couple of quick points. I've also heard environmental concerns. I'll take your word for it, but I'm not sure they've all been answered, and it's not really burying them makes me uncomfortable, especially if they don't end up, you know, if something's compostable, if it doesn't end up in a compost pile, it doesn't compost correctly. So, but the other thing was, it was mentioned that, the state is working on something. If the state ever enacts anything, you know, plastic bag was another good example because the state was eventually going to do it. I didn't think was a reason for us not to do it. And sometimes they do take forever and they don't do something. But if the state did something, that always supersedes what we do here. But I think it'd be a positive to have these. And I'm fine with medication. Drug does have a different kind of connotation to it, I think. I'd be willing to amend that. But this is a public hearing. So this will be a real good opportunity to hear from the private sector, environmentalists, from different groups and different organizations and people about how they feel about this.
Thanks. And just again, I want to clarify, the state has enacted it and they have begun the process. Unfortunately, the language allows it to be very, the time period they have to come up with a plan, the time period for the plan to be reviewed, all is extensive. So that's why I'm looking for us to know where our pharmacies are with the plan, because it could be, just to your point, Legislator Maloney, it could be tomorrow that we hear that it's been approved for these pharmacies, or it could be 5 years from now. And I think it'd be very useful to know where they are, because it is a law, and it did take DOH 2 years to enact it, but they haven't officially enacted it. They have requested these plans already. So it is in some level of the process for sure. So that's why I'm just seeking some more. I think we need some clarification as to where they are. Legislator Ushetel?
Yeah, I realize that we're you know, bringing it forward to a public hearing, which I totally support and will vote in support of tonight. But I do think that for the prior to the public hearing, we should at least address some of the inconsistencies. I totally hear the, although I disagree with the position that a violation is not like a violation of fine is not necessary. I think we should do it. And I think if we think they're going to comply, then all the more reason to do it. It'll never come up, but I'd rather do it. The fact that it references a section 12, but doesn't include a section 12 isn't something that I'm comfortable bringing forward to the public. So I'll vote for it tonight rather than make an amendment off the cuff, but I'll follow up with legislators Petit and Maloney, you know, if you're on board, and we can amend it from the floor at session to make sure that what goes to the public is one that addresses this. Thank you.
So I'll just ask if also anyone from the executive's office or Dr. Smith or, you know, have any input to add to this conversation of having a county level local law. No? Okay. I couldn't tell, Dr. Smith, if you're about to going for the unmute or whether you're just leaning forward. Okay.
Maybe I could jump in. I normally would like to see something in a better shape before it goes to public hearing, along the lines of Legislator Ushetel was suggesting. In this case, there may be some public benefit by having a hearing about these medication take-back programs, because getting the word out about them is a good thing. And so if the sponsors here, you know, are open to going to a public hearing and having things come up and then some potentially substantive rewriting after the public hearing, and they prefer to go that way, I can support this for that purpose. I do think it should be in much better shape before we enact it. But I'm not opposed tonight. Although I would also, if somebody thought we should hold it back, that would be my preference. It's not urgent to do it this month. But it does have a benefit of alerting the public.
Legislator Ushetel? Oh, is your hand just still up?
Sorry, my hand was still up. I'm trying to get used to this.
Yeah.
You know, using the tools instead of just shouting out.
I agree with Legislator Nolan. I am concerned because there's a lot of missing information in terms of, again, the process that we have going on right now in the state, what would really be involved in this oversight should this law pass. And I think those elements are important to be included in a local law, but because this is gonna go to laws and rules anyway, from the perspective of public health, and since I support this in concept, you know, I will support it, but I'll say, like, I feel like we have to do our due diligence on this because it is, you know, there is this state process, which I wish was faster and had already been implemented. But I think there's a lot of questions I still have about how this would work and how this works in conjunction. Legislator Lopez?
Yeah, what's the urgency of moving forward right now? You know, because what everybody has said is that, yeah, they want to move forward, but they have a number of issues that it's not ideal at the moment. Why not hold it over for a month? Until we can actually have, you know, some substantive answers, you know, to the concerns that we all seem to share.
Well, I mean, some of you want to make that motion and we'll see how the room feels, or.
Chair, could I just say one quick thing?
Sure, Legislator Malone.
Laws and rules, if we can also hold it there. If you pass to public hearing here, I'd be willing to amend the title, add enforcement, and fix up all I could that Phil was pointing out. I saw what Abe and Phil were talking about the other day, and I was going to say it if I was able to say it earlier. There is some issues with the wording. I got it back from Chris Rigucci basically right as it went in. Me and Laura did the whereases, a lot of the resolves, and we left the legal part to Chris after doing all the research and feeling like the approach, we had the approach right, which was we basically are adding on to the state. We have to add all the state language. I explained everything, Chris, he thought it. And then Chris, you know, is working on a million different things. I noticed a couple of things that had to be fixed up. If all three of those boxes aren't checked by laws and rules, I'll be asking to postpone and give us a month to fix up the language. But by the time laws and rules rolls around, I will be asking to postpone. I'm happy to change the name, the title, enforcement. I'm happy to add a small amount of enforcement, similar to some other policy laws that we have on the books, and find that the some of those obvious mistakes with the cutting and pasting from the state as we were taking things out, adding all, you know, making it turn in from state to county with some of the descriptions, and then taking certain parts out that were not going to be part of this. There was three different types of pharmacies that were involved in the state legislation. We're only doing one. So there was a lot of cutting and pasting and changing. So give me and Laura till laws and rules. Otherwise I'll be asking for the postponement there to give us a month.
Are you committed to finding out more to inform us about where this currently
actually is? Yeah, I talked, nobody, today? Sure. The council I talked to up in Albany didn't seem to think that there was going to be an issue. I'll make some calls up there. Now I'm still under the impression that they're still giving the option for this envelope. Like they're still not mandating. Are you saying Albany is about to mandate this?
I'm saying what they mandated was that a plan had to be created.
Yes.
That plan, they have a board that reviews the plan and then any feedback, and then it has to be implemented. So
yes, but in that plan, one of the things is you have to check one of these boxes. They're allowing the pharmacists that I know in my hometown pharmacy are under the impression that they're already in compliance and they have chosen to check the envelope box. That's right. Where
my
we come in.
My reading of it was it's much more comprehensive than that, the expectation, including advertising and other things. It wasn't as simple as that you could just check a single box. I read it a lot, but I read it a while ago, and my recollection was the plan had to be a lot more comprehensive than that.
But with this sec, what we're talking about, they are not going to be, they are going to be able to be in compliance of their drug take back plan, according to the state, and not have a drug take back box, which is where we come in. So even if, no matter what happens in the state, I'd say the majority of these large pharmacies are still, and especially hearing that they were the ones that were fighting it to begin with, they are not going to have a medication take back box. So that doesn't deter me at all. That part.
I understand it. Yeah. I just add that part of having a box is how you're disposing of it, which is part of the plan. And that's something I would like to understand how that's going to tie into this. And
you can speak to it. The state.
Sorry, go ahead, Legislator Nolan.
So another question along these same lines would be, what is the time frame for availability of this, what I would call an in-home medication composting bag? Because despite some of the concerns, if you can neutralize the medication at home and then have it composted, that should be potentially an alternative. If you would give out those bags, I don't know if they cost more than $2 to create, but if you could give out those bags in your pharmacy, I would call that compliance. So it'd be good to have an idea of the timeline of that new technology.
Well, those are out. The sheriff has them. We have them in the county right now. I mean,
do we know how much they cost?
Mark, do you know how much they cost?
This was a sample I got from NYSAC. I know, did we buy some, Dr. Smith? We were given some from the state health department.
We weren't given some. I do believe, and I don't to the best of my recollection, it was minimal. It was almost like that was, we were trying to introduce that as an initiative for the public, but we were still behind the concept that these medications could be taken to the pharmacy, left into the, given to the pharmacy to be put into a special security type apparatus, because there's a chain of custody involved in that. And then there would have to be a destruction of those pharmaceuticals after it was deposited in this box at the pharmacy. And then there was a cost to that destruction as well. So these were the other elements to that program that led the box pharmacies say, wait a minute, this is going to be a cost to us, and how, you know, trying to, with their lobbyists or whatever, push back on it. Nevertheless, it did get signed, and Legislator Walter is absolutely correct that the holdup was in the language of the law, which gave an amount of time for these Walgreens, et cetera, to come back with a plan, and then the plan would be reviewed. That's where that holdup was, to my knowledge, in the DOH. So she's right about that. That was part of the point that led to this delay.
Okay. So is there a motion to postpone go ahead, Mark.
I'll follow up. I think I can get the price if you want the price of those bags.
I mean, I know the sheriff had many of them. He brings his van around and then he distributes them. So, you know, he's definitely, I don't know, Legislator Uchitel, if you want to bring it up in law enforcement public safety or let him know. But, you know, that he's definitely been distributing those. And they are a better way to go.
And, you know,
go ahead.
Just make another statement that, you know, several years ago, I mean, we had a total of 19 of these take back boxes that were put into the sheriff's office, as well as other PDs throughout the county. In fact, I think we were the leader in the state at the time with 19 of these boxes. But the argument was that people would feel more comfortable going to a pharmacy when they purchased their medications to bring their medications that were unused back. And that's where the thrust of this law came from. But, you know, we were certainly, as a county, very much on board with getting these take back boxes, and the reports back to us were that they were almost always filled in a record time. Saugerties, would tell us that they were emptying it, you know, rather frequently. So, Vin Martello has been the point person for our department on this very diligently, and really trying to follow up and push it through, and was always getting it. It's in, you know, development and whatnot. So the stalling or the delays definitely were coming from the DOH.
Yeah. Okay. So with the promise from the legislator Maloney and Petit to make revisions prior to laws and rules, is Legislator Lopez, do you still want to make a resolution to postpone it,
I personally don't feel comfortable moving forward with it. We're the health committee, and we are, we've raised concerns as the health committee, and I think kicking it to laws and rules, we're not necessarily doing our job. I would like to see the changes, that way I have an opportunity to be satisfied with those changes and an opportunity to vote to move it forward to laws and rules. And I just don't think I don't have a problem with the public hearing. I've voted against very few public hearings. So, I disagree with the process of it. I'm just uncomfortable moving forward, kicking it to laws and rules, and hoping that the changes that, that were brought up the concerns are addressed by the committee. You know, I would prefer that it came back here first. So I don't want to make a motion to postpone. I would suggest that we take no action, make those changes, you know, bring it back next month. And then if we're all satisfied with the said changes, then, you know, we can vote as a committee and for it to move forward to laws and rules. So,
legislator, you should tell, and then Maloney.
Yeah, I think this is, even if we move it forward to laws and rules, well, first of all, even if we move it forward to laws and rules, it's still going to need, because it hasn't passed through this committee in the form that it'll reach the floor, it'll need a floor amendment. So, you know, if for whatever reason anyone in this committee didn't feel comfortable with it, you would have an opportunity to say your piece there as well. Not that you couldn't attend laws and rules. But number two, and the reason why I feel comfortable supporting this is I feel, you know, a lot of the changes are not necessarily material to health and public health. They're material to the format of the law, and that's exactly what laws and rules is for. So I don't feel uncomfortable. If it was a question of, like, you know, what's the something material to the actual health component, I wouldn't feel comfortable. But I think because most of it is formatting, you know, to legislator Maloney's point, that had been identified already, then I'm comfortable with it. So I would suggest we move forward.
All right. I feel like legislator Maloney, I think you.
I understand where legislator Lopez is coming from. If it does, if we aren't going to pass it on, I'm okay. It does need to be cleaned up. I'd prefer it be postponed rather than no action taken. That's all I'll say. But I do agree that it's pretty arbitrary, the things we're talking about changing, the gist of getting the public's input. They're going to be getting input, giving us input on these drug take back boxes and what do they think. But either way, I'm fine. But I would ask for a postponement rather than just no action.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. Legislator Nolan?
I'd like to make a motion to postpone. I think Legislator Lopez makes good arguments. And if any member of this committee has strong reservations and just wants to see what the law is, this is a public health law. So I'm inclined to support that. And so I would make that motion. And Legislator Maloney prefers a motion to postpone. I'm happy to do it that way.
And I'll second that.
Okay. So all in favor of postponement?
Aye.
Okay. Any opposed?
I'll go opposed to postponement. I think it could go to
So it's postponement passes. Look forward to seeing it in new form next month. Thank you. And thanks for raising, you know, continuing to raise the awareness on these kinds of things. This is all very important. Okay, next we have Resolution 140, amending the 2022 Ulster County budget to accept an allocation of Child Abuse or Neglect Prevention and Treatment Act. Motion to discuss. Legislator Nolan, second. Legislator Uchitel, any discussion? I have this request from, if Mike, if you don't mind, with this resolution and the next resolution, just kind of explain the process. You know, sort of what this is going towards and you know, anything else you can tell us about this.
Sure. What I thought I would do, just in anticipation of the meeting and the nature and scope of the inquiries, is just read into the meeting some written remarks about this particular resolution, as well as the other two. I also just wanted to introduce some of my colleagues from DSS who I asked to join the meeting. Amy Borden, who is our contracts paralegal, and Liz Provenzano, who is our director of fiscal. And again, just to be able to contribute to responding to your inquiries and to ensure that we're responsive to any concerns you have about some of the protocols and processes being followed. Amy is responsible for ensuring that all of our contracts are done in compliance with the county's contract protocols, procurement protocols, and Liz oversees our fiscal department in connection with ensuring that we're in compliance with all of the comptroller and financial department's requirements that are in New World with regard to claiming, transacting any payments, and everything of that nature. And they're both very involved in preparing our resolutions and you know, can contribute to the meeting. So I thought it would be helpful to have them here. So resolution number 140 is a renewal of $70,000 of federal funding to improve local response to families and children affected by substance use disorder. This funding is utilized in a contract for a mental health professional with expertise in screening and assessment in the areas of substance abuse and its impact on families. This mental health professional works in tandem with our child protective services and preventive units to screen, facilitate referrals, and assist in the development and implementation of plans of safe care for infants who are born and identified as being affected by substance abuse and experiencing withdrawal symptoms or fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. This is a contract that is 100% supported through this funding with a 0% county share. And basically, this also comes up in resolution number 141, which is where we have rollover of unspent grant funds from 2021 to the 2022 budget. And what happens in connection with some of our grant funding or some of the funding we receive from the state and federal government because of their fiscal years is, and when the allocations are announced, is that activities and initiatives supported by such funding often span two or more calendar years. Therefore, the unspent or unencumbered funds must be amended into the subsequent year's county budget. So with particular regard to this particular funding amount from CAPTACARA, we had on a couple of occasions hired mental health professionals for the purpose of performing these services. And then shortly after entering into contracts with them, they ended up finding other employment. So that's why the funds ended up being unspent. And we were fortunate that with regard to this money, it was not clawed back. So we had the opportunity to continue to search for professionals who we could hire to perform these services. And so this is the purpose for this particular resolution. And it also appears as a rollover amount in resolution number 141.
That's great. Very thorough. Does anyone have any further questions on this? I appreciate it, especially as the unexpended funds, that was useful to know. Since it's the same amount, I didn't know, you know, whether there was less services provided in 2021. So I appreciate that. So all in favor of resolution 140?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Okay, unanimous. Resolution 141, which is associated, which is amending the 2022 budget for the unexpended funds.
I'll move it.
I'll second. All right, any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Great. 142, approving the execution of a contract for $705,188 entered into the county for family of Woodstock. Motion to discuss?
I'll move it.
Petit, second. Corcoran, any discussion? Legislator Petit?
Thank you. Since we're looking at a living wage, I'm going to go there. What kind of backup do we have as to, you know, the salaries or the hourly wages that are getting paid and how many people are involved in this particular contract? It's my understanding that some of these contracts have been held up in DSS because you're also waiting for that information.
I'll clarify what the only information that I was concerned about that's been clarified is the timeline. This was a project that started in 2020. What we understand from Bert and Joanna, you can correct us if we're wrong, is that the 2020-2021 amount is a reimbursal from the state. So we're getting the money back that we expended. And then we have the money to go back in 2022. So this, we have no costs in this. This is all fully reimbursed. It's just that we spent the money for back in 2020 and 2021, and we're getting that back, as well as getting the money to continue the program in 2022. Does that address your question, Legislator Petit, or was there something else I mean, I understand that doesn't speak to the cost of living, except for the piece that for 2020 and 2021, those expenditures occurred before that legislation was even passed. It would only really have relevance going forward in 2022. But I just wanted to explain the time period that was.
Right. I mean, it's still a contract. And even though it's money being reimbursed to us through the state, by all appearances, it looks like we still owe Family of Woodstock $705,000 for three contracted years. So I'm not quite sure.
No, just to clarify, we paid them already for 2020, 2021. Okay. So we're getting that money back. And then and we're getting the money to pay them in 2022. So all of it is, that's already been paid for with family by us. It was in our budget. We're just getting the state money now in order to cover all of that.
Okay, in 2022, how do we verify that staff is getting paid the minimum living wage and how many employees are actually helping in this program? Because I thought I opened up resolutions with backup, but I don't see.
And I just also want to clarify that this is there's a sub allocation to Catholic Charities, and the bulk of this money is going to Catholic Charities, who is not being sub awarded by DSS, but sub awarded by family for warming centers. And that's really the majority of this money is for the warming centers, which is a sub allocation to Catholic Charities. Just to make it all the more confusing for everybody. Sorry, Legislator Nolan, did you? And then I'll go to you, Mark.
Yeah, maybe Deputy Executive Ryder can address this. Are we able as a county to, I guess, to set our salaries, to set our reimbursement rates, and if we do that at a rate higher than the, will the state always pay us back for what we do? Mm-hmm. We might still be willing to do it, but I'd like to know if we are getting 100% reimbursement if we are changing salaries from what the expected allocation was. And can we go ahead and accept this way and then work internally in the county to increase the salaries as appropriate.
Which is how we did it for the last contract. Go ahead, Deputy Executive Ryder.
Just to answer Legislator Petit's question, I mean, there's a process through the purchasing department for the living wage local law that you all put out. Vendors can request exemptions. I believe there's a requirement for certified payrolls to be submitted via the contract and to purchasing. And so that process exists. And, you know, anybody who's signing a contract with us at this point is required to be under that living wage law. You know, for this one in particular, there's a certain amount of grant funds that we can get reimbursed up to. And if our living wage law increases the amount beyond that, no, the state's not likely to reimburse us beyond that, but I don't think that we're in that situation here.
Okay.
There's also a question, and I don't know if you or Joanna would have it now, if not, you know, potentially by Ways and Means, is just this, since this is using CARES Act funding and these homeless shelters are continued service as opposed to a one and done. Does that, you know, are there any issues with allowability for this type of funding for this type of project, or how is it explained when it's, you know, it's a continued service? It will extend past the grant. And is that allowable with CARES Act?
I believe that was already understood in the application that was submitted to the state, but maybe Commissioner Iaposi can clarify on that or expand.
And more of how we explain we're going to sustain it after the CARES Act. Thank you.
Sure. So to expand on that and create, hopefully, clarification, The Code Blue plan that the county submits to OTDA is something that is a standalone plan to be in compliance with Code Blue requirements. So the fact that we include the operation of a warming center in our Code Blue plan does not trigger any other external requirements that are arrived at from shelters. And this is not specifically emergency solutions grant, COVID, or CARES Act COVID money. Basically, what the state has decided to do starting last year is to funnel the money that they award the county for its Code Blue plan through the emergency solutions grant CV lead agency, which happens to be Family of Woodstock. So this money flows to Family of Woodstock, but we actually are billed by Catholic Charities for the expenses they incur operating the warming center, which we have paid them for, and then we reimburse ourselves. So we are in our sixth year of the Code Blue plan submission, approval, and funding. And they have funded 100% of our plan expenditures over the last 6 years. We anticipate that they will continue to be doing so. There's no indication that they will not. And basically what was arrived at in terms of funneling the money, again, through the emergency solutions grant is why this is necessary. And our Code Blue plan has traditionally been submitted for a specific amount in anticipation of the number of activations we think we will have. We actually submitted a plan for winter 2021 that I believe was at an amount of about $360,000. We only ended up expending $239,000 because there were fewer activations during winter 2021, which was milder. This year's Code Blue plan was for around, I think, $332,000. And we've had more activations. So we're probably going to end up getting billed by Catholic Charities for close to the full plan. So this is just basically how it functions. It's not impacted by any kind of shelter regulations whatsoever.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions on this?
No, I just also like to point out that at the end of the contract, it does have salary and non-salary costs. Over $440,000 is for salary, and it says $160,000 is for direct assistance to the clients. So it would be nice if that was flipped around. Just saying.
Well, paying someone to take care of the person is a different budgeting category than direct assistance. So direct assistance to the clients would be things in addition to somebody who's helping them. So I think we do need to have both, and maybe at another meeting we could discuss what goes into each of those. But paying somebody who is providing care is an important function of this contract, I would say.
So says the doctor.
Fair point.
Any other?
And prior nursing assistant.
All right. All in favor of resolution 142?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Okay. Resolution 143, authorizing the interim commissioner of the Ulster County Department of Mental Health to enter an intermunicipal agreement with New York State Mental Health to accept COVID funding emergency relief money. A motion to discuss?
So moved. Or second?
Nolan, second. Corcoran. Any questions or comments on this one? Legislator Erner?
Just quick, Ms. McDonald, are you still the interim commissioner? Haven't we officially made you the commissioner?
No.
All right, for further discussion. Okay. Any other? All right, all in favor of resolution 143?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstain? Okay, so it's unanimous. Resolution 143, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $185,000 entered into the county for Hudson Valley National Center for Veteran Reintegration. Motion to discuss. Petit, second.
Second.
Nolan, any discussion? All right, seeing none. All in favor? Oh, sorry, was there a hand?
Yes, we do have the director from Veterans Services is here. Could we hear from him a little bit more about the project? I turned off my face.
Well, absolutely. I think we heard about it last month with the peer-to-peer. It is. It's the same peer-to-peer, right?
It is the same peer-to-peer program. We did finally receive the full amount of funding that the grant provides from the state. So,
great.
So this is a home run.
Super. All right, all in favor of resolution 144?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Okay. Resolution number 145, amending the 2022 Ulster County budget to reflect additional fundings from New York State Department of Health for COVID-19 enhanced detection. Motion to discuss. Nolan, second. Someone, second. Erner, any discussion on this? Mark, did we confirm, did you confirm that it is not related to 75 from last month?
Correct. So this is just the 1 million restricted. It is for the AccuCare contract. Just back up, because there's some legislators who weren't on this committee, or when we first got the COVID ELC grant, there was $1 million that was in the restricted fund that we weren't allowed to touch until a later date. They've now released that restricted $1 million. And so this, for the most part, will go towards our temp nursing, which we still have two or three that do contact tracing and everything else on a day-to-day basis. So this is not related to the schools.
All right, thank you. All in favor of resolution 145?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. 146, approving an execution of a contract for $105,000 entered into the county for family home health care, Office of Aging. Motion to discuss. Corcoran, second. Uchitel, any discussion on this? Legislator Petit and then Erner.
Thank you. This was held over from last month because there were some questions about actually hiring the two people providing the service rather than pay through an organization that is less than supportive of the residents of Ulster County.
No, I'm sorry, that's incorrect.
Okay. Yeah, we passed that one.
We did get that one through.
Yeah, those were in home health care aides. These are personal care assistants. This is a slightly different job.
Okay. I apologize then.
No problem. Legislator Erner? You're good?
Just getting unmuted. Thank you.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure what the thumbs meant, but...
Oh, that was my question, though. If... Ms. Copenhaver, could you tell us more about the agency that does do this and why we use them and don't do that in-house?
Sure. You'd have to create about 50 different personal care aid positions in the county if you wanted to cover all the positions that we actually need. So we have six, I believe, contracts with different licensed agencies. ArchCare happens to be one of them. We don't do amendments every year for the rest of them because all of the rest of them are funded by Medicaid and we follow their Medicaid rates. But apparently the New York State Medicaid rate system is about 2 years behind for whatever reason that is. And ArchCare does not have a Medicaid contract. So we have to do this every year for them. But they're just one of our contracted agencies that supply aids when they have them to our case managed patients and clients in their homes. There are others.
Thank you very much.
I hope that helps.
Great. Any other for 146? All right, all in favor of resolution 146?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstention? All right. Maybe we could put a motion to block 147 and 148 for the Veterans Cemetery.
I'll move to block.
You should tell second Nolan all in favor of the block.
Aye.
Okay. All in favor of resolution 147, 148? This is just the neg deck and the agreements for the ongoing Veteran Cemetery in New Paltz. Did you want to say something?
Yes, I would like to give you some status on where we're at.
Oh, sure.
Cemetery expansion, if you'd like. We had to go through three different archaeological studies. So that's what we've been doing for the past year. And after the third phase, we finally did receive the go-ahead from the New York State Historical Preservation Office and the Indian Nations. So we did get the thumbs up. We did our due diligence. And now we are looking to get, we have a schedule set up to where we're hoping to break ground on Memorial Day.
Wonderful.
So that's I don't think that's out of reach for us. So it's apropos to be able to do it on Memorial Day. So we're excited about that. I want to thank all of you for all of the support and backing us for all of the different phases of the archaeological project and the different monies that have been added to get this going. So thank you.
Perfect. I'm going to just take that vote one more. Oh, sorry. Did you have something, Legislator Nolan?
That's such wonderful news. I'm so glad to hear it.
All right, Legislator Erner, you're on mute.
Thank you. I found some funny typo on the first page here where they identified New Paltz as being in Orange County. And there's also some, that's the engineering firm that did that. There's some confusion about an address that I don't think is material at all to it, but just pointing it out. For the record, we should clear that up. There was one other minor correction that I can send along at some point.
Yeah, would you let Dennis Doyle know?
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, there are, we found three. So if you find more than three, Phil, let us know. But one is there's a reference in there to Saugerties, and it should be obviously New Paltz. The address is right, but the reference is to Saugerties. There's two typos in addition to that, and we did find the Orange County reference as well. So. If you have more, we appreciate it. It is labeled draft, and it wouldn't be finalized until the legislature approves it. We did have a conversation with the clerk to submit a revised, so what's on file with the clerk would be the appropriate one. But they're not material to the determination.
Thank you. All right, all in favor of resolution 147 and 148?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Okay. In terms of old business, we had talked about looking at the contracts that we have with Health Alliance to identify if any of these activities could potentially be sourced elsewhere. I'm going to share my screen. This was all sent to you from by Jay, or it's in the OneDrive. I assume you all can see the contracts here.
Yes, yeah. Can see
so
it.
The first one we have is New York Connects Wellness Technicians. This is associated with non-judgmental individual information and assistance for persons of all ages with disabilities regarding long-term care services. I'll just say that we asked Dr. Smith to be aware of this and prepared to. The questions, there are several questions we have. One is, are there other organizations that could potentially provide this service, and in some of these cases, maybe moving some of the service in-house? And then the other would be, if yes to either of those, then, you know, what could potentially next steps be? So, Dr. Smith, you want to start with that first one?
Well, the first one really is the Office for the Aging.
Okay, sorry.
Walter, not us, so, thanks.
Okay, so I will defer to the Office of the Aging.
Sorry, Legislator Walter, I think Sue
I'm
might
still
have
had here.
To come. Oh, you're still
I'm
there.
I'm still here if okay. you need to hear. I figured that would happen.
Right. Sorry, Sue. So can you speak okay. at all to whether this would potentially be can be delivered either again by another organization that you contract with or potentially brought in-house?
Well, the two people that are currently occupying those positions would either have to be hired directly by the county. That's one possibility. The other possibility is to put it out for RFP again. I don't know if that's due right now, but if somebody else were to do this, they would have to start from ground zero for training. I think I mentioned that before. There's years of resource training and information that these folks have that they're required to go through New York Connects, who funds both of these positions. And they would have to start, whoever got into it, if they were new, would have to start unless they were a New York Connects expert someplace else. So it would sort of set us back. If we had to start from ground zero, we have one full-time staff member who's staff, and these are the other two. One is full-time, one is part-time.
Legislator Nolan?
Would there be difficulties with stabilized provision of services because of that? That is, would the county be able to keep people coming through the training in ways that would allow us to have stable staffing? Or is that a benefit that we get by using this service?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, when you tell me that there's a kind of a pipeline for the training of these individuals, I imagine that this firm has people applying regularly, and so they train people who might not come and do this for us in Ulster County. If we're doing it, I would be concerned that we would have that continuing influx to be able to cover for transitions when somebody leaves the position. But maybe that's just a wrong impression of mine, so I'm asking if we know about that.
So New York Connects is a state-run system through NYSOFA, and NYSOFA offers the training. So whoever is in this position, whether it's a staff member or a contracted person, signs up for a training, does the trainings, is upgraded every year, does new trainings if new information is to be had, and they're required. So whoever occupies the position has to go through all of the required trainings and then keep up, bless you, with whatever they need in the future to, you know, keep their skills sharp, to keep them current with whatever they have to do. It's not something that we would lose the ability to do, because that's all through NYSOFA, and all of the OFAs in the state have to do this with their New York Connect staff. So all New York Connect staff have to do this regardless of whether they're staff or contracted.
So maybe I could follow up sure. with the flip side of that then. If that's the case and the training happens without our having to do it, which is great, uh-huh. would there be a benefit that you would see either to your office or to the county to take over the function of hiring these people directly rather than going through a provider?
You're probably the wrong person you want to hear from when you talk about direct hire. I want to have all of my staff be direct hire. But that's the way I like things to be done. And that includes all the aides and everything else that I don't think I'll ever get. But as far as this position is concerned, I'd much rather have it to be a direct hire than somebody. But I'm certainly willing to entertain the idea that both of these staff could be direct hires if they're interested.
That's a great answer. Thank you. So that's good. I mean, we have time because the term ends in 2024. And so this allows us to explore this. Maybe this is something we consider for the 2023 budget. Joanna's taking notes, I could tell, of working with you, Sue, on converting these to a direct hire. And then we would just, and we obviously would need to work with legal on our ability to end the contract with Health Alliance if should we move in that direction.
Well, why would you have to end it if it comes up for an RFP again?
Well, if we make it as a direct hire, it won't come up for an RFP, but I'm saying end it because right now they're in a contract that goes till 2024.
Right.
At this stage.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay.
All right. The next one is more
Thank
storage.
You all. I'm slipping out.
Okay. Is Thanks. More storage and autopsy facilities. I assume I know the answer to this, Dr. Smith, but is there anyone else who could do this besides the hospital?
No.
Okay.
There's no other morgue facility. There's no other morgue facility with refrigeration capability in Ulster County than the one in Health Alliance on Broadway. And I believe there are a couple of spots that are available in Health Alliance on the Mary's Avenue campus, but it's all under the Health Alliance umbrella. There is no other facility in Ulster County.
Yeah, that seemed obvious, but and then we have the OMH pass through for crisis intervention, inclusive of stabilization triage. I guess one of the questions, Tara, is. Since we are opening a crisis stabilization center, could we divert this funding to our crisis stabilization center?
I think the mechanism, whether the funding and program codes would be able to be matched with crisis stabilization, is not something that I know right now because we don't currently have crisis stabilization centers that are licensed that are operating that way, but it's certainly an option. But it is specifically around individuals that appear at the ED. So it's for folks that are, okay, you're here, you don't require hospitalization, inpatient hospitalization, but you're here, which means that you need some support. So how about we have a staff member sit down and sort of do an assessment and see how we can get you linked to supports. So the hope would be that when the stabilization center is operational, less people will be going to the ED for that particular reason, and more would be going to the crisis stabilization because they weren't appropriate for inpatient hospitalization. But for the ones that do end up there, I'm not sure about diverting those funds for them to be supported elsewhere.
Although there is no inpatient hospitalization.
Right, but
I
they
mean,
do.
The crisis stabilization could possibly if they needed inpatient, they could probably maybe get them elsewhere just as easily.
The distinction for me that I'm right now is that if someone appears at the ED today, and the idea is that they're at an acute level where inpatient is the safest way to be able to meet their needs, they would remain at the ED until they're able to find a bed. As opposed to the crisis stabilization center, they wouldn't have that ability to do that. So the hope is that folks that truly do need an inpatient stay would still end up in the ED, get the appropriate assessment, and then have the option of being inpatient in another nearby hospital. But the crisis stabilization center, they wouldn't have the ability to do that. They'd still have to go over to the emergency department.
I mean, assuming it would have to be more than 24 hours because they could hold you for 24 hours at the crisis.
They could hold you, right. They could hold you. But again, I'm hoping to make the distinction that someone who truly does require the inpatient based on the fact that their acuity is so high, they can't be met safe in the community would still have access and the ED would still be the most appropriate place for them to go. Right. It's just that there's many individuals that we could meet their needs in different ways. It's just the ED is all that we had. And the Crisis Stabilization Center would take care of that issue. So I just a
right. Legislator Nolan?
Yeah, I think this is a very helpful conversation and suggests to me that we look at for this contract, whether we can decrease the amount of funding that is going here. But I think that what Ms. McDonald is saying is exactly right. We're going to have some facility at the emergency room, at the emergency department. So whether it needs to be this level of funding, I don't have, you know, I think we should maybe look at offline. And if we can switch the funds so that we're providing them at the site where we think the better care will be provided, that, but this is, I think this will be a bigger conversation than we can do right. in a committee meeting.
Luckily, this contract goes till 12/31, so it gives us time to sort of figure it out prior to the renewal. Legislator Petit?
Thank you. And I'd just like to say that we do have another hospital in the county, and they have taken in patients who are in distress, stabilized, and then, of course, they have to transfer them out to Mid-Hudson Regional. But, you know, we shouldn't forget that they're available and would cover the southern part of our county.
Good point. Thank you. All right. So we're definitely going to need to look at this deeper. I'll just say the right now, and I don't know, Tara, if we've told you this, but the plan was, assuming there are not too many resolutions next month, that we do special time just for mental health with you next month.
Okay.
If there are too many resolutions, then we'll make a special meeting next month. We have a special meeting for housing this month. Mental health, we're going to have a special, either tag it on to our next meeting or have a special meeting for mental health in April. And then I think we'll dig a lot more deeper into these things.
That sounds great. I love the opportunity.
Okay, the next one is the rabies treatment. Is there any other group organization that could offer these?
Well, the situation is that the way it works now is that an individual who's bitten by an animal would need, obviously, wound care treatment, tetanus shots, in addition to potentially to rabies prophylaxis, vaccination, and immune globulin. So they would need emergency room care to deal with the wound. And then the contract as it stands now with Health Alliance is that if the individual meets the criteria, in other words, it was either a wild animal bite or an animal that could not be contained and followed for 10 days or so to see if they were ill with rabies, or if it's an animal that was trapped and we could test it for rabies. You know, if this suspicion is strong that it's rabies, then the hospital calls us, and then we go ahead and authorize the treatment for, in terms of the rabies vaccination piece of it and the rabies immune globulin treatment.
So does urgent care offer this?
No, no.
So they're the only ones who could do it.
Because you need it on 24/7 basis, Legislator Walt. And the problem with urgent cares is that they're open various hours, but, you know, at most maybe 8 to 8 or whatever. So if someone is, you know, bitten during the night or evening hours or whatever, that, you know, they would need a 24/7 type of facility that would give them that treatment and potentially the rabies vaccine. The hospital does obviously bill the person's insurance for as much as they can regarding the treatment in the ED and whatnot. The balance then is picked up for the rabies vaccination by us if the insurance doesn't cover the amount needed, but it is capped at $3,000 per case at this point. And the problem really is the access for 24/7 treatment.
Thank you. Legislator Nolan?
Now, this is very interesting. I think to Legislator Petit's point, would Ellenville Regional Hospital be a possible alternative? And that this probably happens very rarely, but could we look at the data on where in Ulster County the bites have happened? You know, they might not be Kingston-centric type of diagnosis. So it might be something where we could think about it for whether we can move it. And I just want to say that if anybody wants to hear the story of my consulting on a case for treating rabies in Nepal because
another
of Nepal
time, came
to me in San Francisco, you can ask me after the meeting.
Right. We're already here on 2 hours, so no Nepal stories today. Legislator Erner.
This item says 100% state on what I'm looking at also. Is that not the case, Dr. Smith?
It's a grant that the money comes through the state rabies grant program. So, yes, we do receive money to get reimbursed for the amount that would be paid. That's a very good point. Thank you.
Yeah, just for reference, almost all of these, well, not all, about half of them are flow through money. Our issue is doing business with Health Alliance, not necessarily just restricted to when we're paying for it.
Yes, I understand. I have further thoughts about that once we go through the list.
Right. The next one we have is the methadone maintenance treatment program. So are there other organizations that can offer methadone maintenance?
There are other organizations that would be able to obtain a license to operate a methadone clinic. It would mean Health Alliance making the decision to voluntarily give up their license or possibly keep their license, but we could maybe support another provider in doing the service. But that would be a decision that we would share in tandem with OASAS because they would have to be the licensing agency. And so making the decision to have a county that has multiple methadone clinics in it when there are counties that don't have any, you know, I don't know how successful that would be, but that would be the path that we would have to take. Either Health Alliance would have to give it up and another operator get the license, or we would have to ask for an additional operator.
Great. So for next month, do you think, you know, can we regroup on that, on what it would entail to communicate with OASAS our interests of exploring another license in our county?
Sure.
Any other on this? Okay. Radiology services for tuberculosis. Are they the only ones who can offer that?
It's a good question. Probably not. In terms of, you know, we do have other radiologic practices in the county. I don't know how the charges would work if you went to a private entity as opposed to going through the hospital. I mean, that could be explored, but the answer is there are other radiologists in the county for sure.
So maybe it'd be useful to know how many of these are actually done. And so we could identify with another organization what they would actually charge us if we did contract with them. Okay. And then the last one is the one we just recently had, Office of the Aging. So she's gone. I don't know if anyone else could speak to this one, but this is disease prevention services. It's $8,000. I'm not sure if this, do you know, Dr. Smith, what this covers for $8,000? I mean, I see the listing that it's tracking and everything, but like, it's not a person. I would imagine it's not a person's time.
What are you, I'm sorry.
I could share my screen again. I'm sorry. So this last one is, so administrative oversight.
Oh, that's Office for the Aging as well.
Yeah, I know. And I realized she's gone. And that's why I was just checking if you knew, or maybe Joanna knew, because it's for only $8,000, if that's correct. I'm just wondering.
This is not the same one that we approved last month, because I see it's called Health Alliance Works, and I thought we moved the Kingston Works one.
We did, but what's confusing me is the amount. Jay, are we confident that that's the right amount? Because that doesn't look like it covers. The New York Connect was the two people we did. Sorry, Jay, what?
I'm always confident until you ask me if I'm confident, and then I'm no longer confident. The Kingston Works contract, though, to the deputy executive was for the New York Connects program.
Okay,
This is different, but it's administrative oversight, and it's sort of odd that it's only $8,000. It's like that it's giving some stipend towards someone who's already doing something, But, you know, I'll try to reach out with Sue and try to get a better sense of why are we paying them, and could we pay? Maybe this can be an in-house administrative oversight thing instead, but we'll reach out to her. All right, so we have some homework for Tara, and we have some homework for Dr. Smith. We need to know whether, you know, the process for OASAS in terms of a second license for methadone treatment, an exploration of, you know, breaking out the crisis intervention piece, then for Dr. Smith in terms of radiology, how many people this is actually serving, so that we have a sense of what, you know, if we were to reach out to someone else, what kind of costs would they give us? Exploration of things like rabies intervention and crisis stabilization at perhaps the Ellenville campus, Ellenville Hospital, if that makes sense. And so if we could just regroup on this to talk about it some more. Let me just pull up. Now, I know legislator Erner had sent something around just briefly ago of other things that he would like to discuss. I guess I would ask, with the respect of this being a 2 hours and people just having gotten that, I only briefly got to look at it myself. Is there a highlight of something right now, or is there something you can sort of put on the docket that we could either add to our next meeting or have a special meeting, or just make sure we have the true time and not when people have been are tired from a long day and then 2 hour meeting? So is there anything that you feel is sort of urgent for discussion now, or could we work on putting some specific things on the next agenda and or a special meeting? What are your thoughts on that, Legislator Erner? Because again, haven't had a lot of time to look at it.
Certainly, Chair Walter. Yeah, in general, this can all wait. I thought I would reserve my comments to the hospital stuff that we were just talking about then. So the whole committee should have an email that I sent early this afternoon, as you said, Chair Walter. And just in terms of hospitals in our county, and I would love to invite Legislator Gavaris to advise us about how they transformed the Ellenville Hospital. He and I have had a conversation briefly about it, but I see it as a possible way where we can come to some peace. Like, we don't want to destroy our hospitals in Kingston, of course. And as we're going through and looking, well, how can we divest from them because they're not doing what we need? Like, that's real. That is a tool we can use. But I would be much happier, I'm sure we all would, if we could come to some peace. And I think Legislator Gavaris might have some useful information for us about that. And my understanding, I spoke with Mayor Noble the other day about the hospitals as well. And so, understanding that the Benedictine site is slated to become the hospital, essentially. And so seeing if we can't direct what happens to the Broadway campus more toward what the public needs somehow or other. And the other thing that I learned was that the hospital is itself considered a state public benefit corporation. And so I'm not sure what further accountability that gives it to the public than this committee or we had already known about. But we know of many public entities that we appoint people to and then they go and do their thing. So I'm not really sure, but that's what I'll put forth here tonight.
Thank you. I'd say, I think my preference over Legislator Gavaris, although he'd be welcome to come, is we actually invite Steve Kelly, who is the CEO of Ellenville Regional Hospital. We also have a northern hospital. Some of you may not realize it's very small, and we might want to hear from them as well. But yes, I think I'm sure Steve Kelly would be very happy to come and talk about what he's doing and what he would like to do. So I'm happy to extend an invitation to him. Maybe because the next meeting we're going to focus on mental health specifically, it might be more like in May, just so that we can give the time to mental health first. But I can guarantee you Steve would love to chat about what he's doing. Legislator Uchitel, were you going to say the same thing or do you have something else?
You took the words out of my mouth. Yeah, I think we should get Steve Kelly in here. He's great. I've been so impressed every time he speaks to us.
Thanks. Yeah. And I will say there is a plan for the Broadway campus. They call it a health home, but it's not the same. It originally was going to be this idea where different organizations could all be in one entity, but now it's different health alliance services all in one entity. But I think we could, at the same May meeting, perhaps, invite the head of that hospital so that he can share with us what their plans are. I think it would be great to have him here and hear. And if we have to have a special meeting about hospitals, we can have that meeting too, so that we can hear what these hospitals are doing. And it would be nice to see the white of his eyes and hear what he is planning on doing. Legislator Lopez?
Yeah, maybe worth a trip down to the Allenville Hospital. We did that years ago. He gave a great tour.
That's terrific.
It gives you an idea. Of course, he's that dynamic guy and a dynamic speaker. And nobody represents that hospital better than him. But to actually see the transformation that's taken place over the years, it's definitely something that you want to see in person.
Should we make a May meeting be a field trip to Allenville? That would be terrific. Jay, can we see if we can figure that out and have our May meeting over in Allenville? Great idea, Legislator Lopez. Dr. Smith?
Yeah, I just want to comment. They do not have an ICU at Allenville Hospital, just for clarity. And they can, it's a limited access critical care sort of facility with maybe 20 beds, but no ICU. And if they do have an individual that needs ICU or higher level of care, they do have to transfer them to another hospital. And it would be interesting to see which hospitals they do transfer to. I know in the past they have transferred to Health Alliance ICU, and whether or not they also transfer out of the county, because certainly, Orange Regional, which is, forget what they're called now, but there are other hospitals within driving distance, so to speak, and for that kind of transport. But they are very limited in terms of what they can provide in terms of services right now.
Thank you. We'll look forward to letting him talk about that too. Legislator Uchitel?
Yeah, I want to add that Westchester Medical, the Health Alliance campus doesn't have a level one trauma center, so their ICU is limited as well, and involves serious cases getting airlifted, which is a very expensive thing, and also involves an extra ambulance ride, which is why I'm glad that we have an EMS conversation picking up steam at the county level. So all of these things become very real when you actually need care, and I'm glad that we're going to be digging deeper on this.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thanks. Thank you, Legislator Erner, for bringing this up. And we will definitely also have time to dig into your document a little bit more. I know there was mental health there, which we're definitely going to focus on next month and a few other things. So with that, I'll take a motion to adjourn.
I'll move.
I don't know who did. Lopez, second, Petit, all in favor?
Aye.
All right, thank you all. It's a half hour shorter than last month. Bye.
Good night.
Good night.